The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
In 1975, New York City was on the brink of financial disaster. In the previous years, the city officials had borrowed more money from banks to prop up its failing local government, until finally the banks decided that it was enough. This decision would have long-reaching repercussions that seem to have led directly to how we see the world today. The final decision to take control of a government and effectively replace publicly elected politicians with bankers would fundamentally shape the future of the modern world. Some of the world's greatest enemies, like Muammar Gaddafi, Saddam Hussein, Al-Qaeda, were a direct result of carefully crafted narratives by Western governments in order to maintain the status quo. The youth counterculture, who thought they were rebelling and making a statement by withdrawing from public and political action, played directly into the hands of the governments, who were now just managers. How did one city's fall to bankers produce the carefully maintained illusion of a free world? Were the revolutions that shook the Middle East in recent years and the Occupy Wall Street movement the prototypes for the next stage of our social evolution? This case file, the theorists turn up the house lights and take a peek behind the curtain of modern society to find out what's real and unreal in hypernormalization.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing, Case File 131, Hypernormalization. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
I'm Andrew.
Oh. Try to sound at least a little bit excited.
Well, I'm sorry, this fucking documentary we're about to talk to got me hyper depressed. So.
Yes, this is all Dan's doing. Dan has turned our positive outlook on life into now a gloom and doom because we all sat down and watched a documentary called Hypernormalization. And God damn, if you haven't seen it, give it a watch. Where can you find it again, Dan?
You can find it on YouTube. Just type in hypernormalization and it should come up.
Now, and preface, it's not like... Hey guys, watch this 18-hour YouTube video we saw. It's a documentary, but you can get it on YouTube.
Yes.
It's not like some YouTube creator just made some weird movie.
It was recommended by your maester. That's all you should.
It comes from the maester. You know it's
maester
good.
Approved.
Yeah. Maester approved.
Yeah.
You need that seal.
I do. I need one. I need a stamp.
Oh, that'd be a good stamp. Like, someone make us that graphic where we can say sealed by Dan, he hits it, and then just a stamp of approved goes over approved.
Maester approved.
Yeah. Man, such a good who did the documentary again? It was done for the BBC. I remember that. I just don't remember the guy's name.
Adam Curtis. Adam Curtis is a great documentary maker. He's worked for the BBC for years. People have probably come across his stuff. He's been doing documentaries since the 80s, like 1983. I know he's worked with the UK band Massive Attack, and I know you can't tell me that you haven't heard of the band Massive Attack.
I can tell you that right now.
I can tell you that. I feel like I should know, but I can.
They did music. Their music was on the soundtrack to The Matrix, and it was also in the soundtrack too. Blade 2, the best.
Yeah, that's exactly where I knew it was from.
It's the fucking the Walking Out. Over there, all the vampires.
I have that album like, with fucking and Crystal Method.
Yep.
Fucking yeah.
So Adam Curtis is a really great documentary maker, and he makes documentaries. His favorite topic to talk about is about power and how it works in society, which very much runs up our alley in terms of conspiracies. Oh.
As soon as I watch this, I was like, this confirms everything I ever thought.
Yeah, I was like, this puts into words exactly how I felt what's going on right now. And this was made in 2016.
Four years ago,
it was released in 2016. So he'd probably been working on it for probably at least 1 or 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay, so where do we want to jump in here?
It's so hard to get in.
So it covers like everything from the last 100 years, pretty much.
I mean, well, it starts in 1975.
True. Okay.
Yeah. With this documentary, basically the idea is that he kind of starts out from the premise, like he puts this idea out there, this argument that the people, pretty much politicians, technocrats, and radicals, you want to call them, right, have become complacent, and only now, whereas there used to be this push for change, now there is a push to maintain the system that is now governing our entire reality, and that they have built together, whether knowingly or kind of they just by you know, just by submitting to it, they've built this entire reality around us of a simpler, like a more simplified, cartoonish caricature of reality that is easier for us to kind of digest instead of getting into the complexities of the entire world and how it works. Now we've had this entire
it's like a black and white, like just like two views of the world, usually like just push two narratives on the people, even though the actual issues are so much more complex. There's like, oh, you're either anti or pro this, or they show you that of like foreign policies, and they don't show you anything in the middle, and they make it seem it's promoted so much on the media that it makes it just seem like it's just, that's just how it is. It's normal.
Yeah. It's in the documentary, Adam Curtis is great because it's really almost, I mean, you want to call it, if anything, it is a conspiracy. It is a huge,
100%. It's a huge conspiracy, mm-hmm. man.
Right.
The wool's been pulled over our eyes.
And we've become
complacent to it.
And it all began back in 1975 is what he kind of posits, is that during in 1975, if people don't remember, what the big thing was, there was this big problem with New York. New York City was the problem, at least in the United States. What had happened was that New York, after the whole kind of push post-World War II, after the pushing of all these programs that, I know, New Deal programs from FDR's administration, these kind of things to kind of get the economy moving, New York became this kind of place where it almost came like a testing ground for kind of socialist ideas. So they had like free education, you know, some sort of like subsidized healthcare, these ideas, you know, lots of teachers, policemen, firefighters, all this public libraries, all
welfare
of these
programs.
Things. Yeah. Welfare, you know, social welfare programs, all of these things kind of came out during the New Deal process, this kind of like whole kind of, want to call it like democratic socialist era. But by 1975, due to a lot of different factors like bad accounting, you know, widespread corruption, these things, New York was basically failing. It was falling apart, right?
Right.
A lot of the middle class population,
they were like leaving.
Probably they were leaving the city.
They were leaving.
They were moving out to the suburbs. Right. So they're moving out to the suburbs. And so what happens when all these people move out to the suburbs? They take their tax dollars with them. Right. So, you know, New York City cannot support the programs that they're on. And so what New York City began to do is they began to take money from the banks. They began to take loans, huge loans, right, to try and keep New York City afloat. So now you have all these, after a certain amount of time, the bank said, well, like, you guys are taking all this money, but we've reached the point where now we can't see us getting our money back.
Yeah.
And so this became the turning point where Adam Curtis kind of puts forth the idea that this was the point where there was a new experiment.
Where these we banks, fucked up.
Yeah. Start of the fuck up.
As a society, this is where we fucked up. We let this happen.
This is where the banks decided we're going to control the city, not the politicians. We need to run the city without politics because obviously you guys can't make money. You know, once you put the bankers in charge,
it's all about money.
It's all about
it's,
money.
It's running the numbers.
So, right after this, New York basically defaults on its loans. What happened, you know, New York tried to ask the United States, like the federal government, this, you know, New York tried to ask the, you know, the state government tried to ask the federal government, you know, help us out. You know, they asked for, you know, at least Eisenhower during that time. They tried to ask him for help and he was pretty much like, fuck off. You guys done it. You guys are fucked. There was definitely a shifting of kind of the political atmosphere at the time, and they were moving over to more of a conservative kind of mindset, and it was a new conservative kind of mindset, and also kind of a new you could also call it like a new liberal mindset a bit, which it was kind of like pulling in both sides. So you kind of had the liberals who were kind of like free market, you know, wanted to free market capital, like free capitalism, all this stuff, you know, just about making as much money as you possibly can. And then all the conservatives were like, we'd also don't want to spend any money.
Right.
You want to cut all the social programs and we just want to, you know, keep all the money where it is. So those two forces kind of just pulled New York apart. And basically what happens is they formed a council of about like 10 people to kind of basically run the city, which 9 out of the 10 were all bankers.
God damn.
So now the bankers have control of the city, and this was the beginning of something that we had never seen before.
Right? Now, instead of like running it for the good of the people, it's for the profit of the banks.
Exactly.
The argument was they were just going to run it by the numbers. So if they could hire more people, because that's what it said, the economy said, like when they punched their numbers, they would hire more people. But if they didn't need people, they would fire them because it doesn't make sense to keep people employed if we don't have the money coming in. So they were just like, we're just going to run it completely by the numbers. And I think at the beginning, I don't even believe that coming out of my mouth. I don't think they had the best intentions at the beginning. Mm. I think instantly people saw dollar signs. They were like, oh, we can use this to maximize profits.
So sure. Yeah, they cut all the social programs. They, you know, they fired tons and laid off tons of, you know, social, or what you want to call them, like not social, but like, you know, firefighters, you know, firefighters,
public service.
Policemen,
public
servants. So teachers, you know, hundreds of teachers lost their jobs. You know, they broke up all these things with the unions. Like they made all these negotiations with the unions. The unions felt like they were being greedy and all this. So they broke up all this stuff and it was all this. And this is where you get this, like, if you've watched any movies and you've been like, you know, you've seen the movie where it's the era of like shitty New York. This was it.
This was it. Yeah,
like this.
This
was
is
the time.
Lance Kincaid's New York.
Yeah, or if you watch the, I don't know if it's not on Netflix anymore, but the Get Down. Like if you watch the Get Down, the Netflix series, the Get Down, like where there's the burnt out buildings of New York, like the Bronx is just a fucking war zone. This was it.
This is it.
This was the time. So now, this is what's happening in New York. Now, also in 1975, across the ocean, you had another kind of social change in the works. Even if you go back before the 70s, to give you some context, you have the major powers. Now, we go over to the Middle East, and we're going to talk about Syria a bunch. But before we talk about that, I just want to put into context how the Middle East at this point has shaped up, where there are two major powers in the Middle East. And it's actually extended all the way into this day, is there's basically a Cold War happening in the Middle East. And it's basically it comes down to Saudi Arabia and Iran. Like, those are the two major powers in the Middle East. And they, for the last, 50 years, they've been going at each other in a type of kind of Cold War. And they've been basically using the other Middle Eastern states to kind of fight their proxy wars. So even, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Libya, all of those countries, which I think either three out of four of those or all four now are all failing states at this moment.
Yep.
Completely falling apart. And so now when you get to, 1975, you have a country, Syria, that's kind of on the rise. So you have Syria, and 1975 is pretty much when the Assad regime, not the current Bashar Assad, but his father, took control and was beginning to kind of push this idea that the Middle East should be there should be a vision of a united Middle East, which would be able to shape the world. Like, they would be a more complete, entire Muslim Middle East united, and they would be able to shift the balance of power.
Right. At this time too, like, you got to remember there was a really big dispute between the Arabs and the Israelis. Right. And that was the big push behind Assad, really wanted the Palestinians who, and a lot of the Palestinian refugees lived in Syria and Lebanon and the surrounding countries. And he really wanted the Palestinians, who at that time didn't have a country, to have their country back, which was inhabited by the Israelis.
Right.
So you have all this stuff going on, and it's just like in this documentary, what I love is, like, there's so much great archival footage of just stuff going on. And you see how much, like, the Middle East has changed between, like, just the 70, like, in the 10 years, they had, like, 75 to, like, 85 is incredible. Like, you had, before even, like, Iran at one point, like, they were becoming, what you call, like, a secular nation, right? They had a dictator that had been put in power, by the United States, basically a United States backed coup, had put in the Shah. And he had basically was what he was saying was, like, modernizing Iran, and they were becoming more of a free kind of state. And this is where you get the kind of, if you go back and see some there's some great pictures of, like, when it was becoming that, it wasn't what it is now, which is a very strict and fundamentalist kind of a theocracy, basically. Mm. And back then it was like, hey, but the problem was that he was brutal in the way that he governed Iran, had secret police force, all this stuff, really getting rid of all his opposition and things like that, because he could do it because he had the backing of the US. They don't care. But now, after he is taken out, like, there's a revolution. You have the Iranian revolution where they took over, and that was basically when the Ayatollah, I'm pretty sure it's the Ayatollah, took over, right? Yes. Ayatollah Khomeini. Yep. Took over, and now it has become what it is today. So you just see this whole big change happen, and all of these things happening within the Middle East, and you have to realize that all of this is connected, right? All these changes that are happening within the Middle East, the stuff that is the vision that Assad had for the Middle East, was something that at the time Henry Kissinger, who was the Secretary of State, he didn't want.
Alarm bells, Strangelove. Alarm bells, yeah. Going off.
Yeah,
Kissinger, this name's everywhere in the New World Order conspiracy,
right? Henry Kissinger was the dude. Like he was not in a good way.
Not the bad dude.
All I've read and all I've heard about the guy is he's a fucking asshole. Like absolute.
But he's the basis for Doctor Strangelove.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they based it off him as like his character.
Totally.
Yeah.
And his whole thing, the what he used to dictate his policies on the world stage and like in the United States' relations with other countries was a vision of basically, you know, strong arm them, you know, mutually assured destruction. Like, do what we want or we're going to nuke you or we're going to nuke each other and everything is going to blow up. And he kind of saw it in this. It was the U.S.'s. Obligation to kind of, it was their charge to keep the chaos away, right? To keep order. It's
Team America, world police.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, I mean, it's not like, a bad.
This is right around that time when it seemed like America, the good guys, like keeping democracy around the planet. You know, this has seemed to be when the foreign policy changed to more of what it is today, like right around this time.
So you see this kind of whole thing. So while this is all happening, you have all this stuff as well. You also have the Soviet Union. So you have the Soviet Union doing its thing, which is basically trying to project this. They were trying to build their perfect atheist state. You know, right. They were trying to build a society without capitalism, without all of that things. And they were trying to be able to show the world that a society can be built with, you know, by the working force, for the working force. That was a kind of idea.
Shared first, economy.
Yeah. But
sounds good in theory, right?
Mm-hmm.
It does. Like, you know, everyone's your brother, everyone's your sister. You all work together for equal means, equal opportunity. But it just never seems to work out that way.
Yeah, but due to the, you know, Soviet Union's, you know, absolute corruption, you know, probably bad accounting as well. You have this kind of, this is where we get into the kind of the namesake of the documentary, which is called hypernormalization. Now, hypernormalization is a concept that was kind of created as a way to explain the kind of cognitive dissonance that a person feels, at least the population of the Soviet Union felt when you see your life and you see your life as like, you know, whatever, a rural Russian, you know, or Ukrainian or things like that, where you see that the world is shitty.
Yeah.
Like you're living in a dump. You have electricity. You might not have electricity. You don't know. There's no work. There's no food. There's nothing you can do. Like there's no freedom. There's no things like that.
There's no alternative to the status quo. There's
no. Right. And then, but the government, what you see on TV, is showing you this picture of the world, this ideal picture of what you're supposed to be believing. You're supposed to believe that, no, the country is actually doing great.
This is right? When you see the Russians come over for the summit series playing Team Canada, and they bring over this like an army of the most badass top-end athletes the world's ever seen. And they're like, oh, shit, Russia must all be like this. But really, it's all their effort into this one hockey team and the rest of the country is.
And they were also the first to discover steroids. So those guys were just fucking jacked.
Fucking huge, man.
So hypernormalization is the idea that these two pictures in your mind are kind of battling it out and you don't know which to believe. And then your mind just says, well, fuck it. Like everything is... You don't know what to believe, but your brain just says, well, this is just how it is. And then I'm just going to live life like this. This is fine.
To give it like an example of today, I got to think this is exactly how the people of, say, Flint, Michigan feel when they can't get fucking clean water or drinking water. And they're like, this seems crazy, but everyone says this, like, it's fine and we're good. and it's okay.
Well, that'd be not. Like the easiest version of it, but like more like North Korea.
Oh totally. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Totally.
Like the state, it's been proven that they will stage shops and stuff when foreign press come through, like stock the front shelves when the back is like empty and like.
Well, we saw it in that Seth Rogen movie, right? Whatever the fuck that was called.
Oh, we.
What was that called? The one with the, what's his face? Fucking Green Goblin son.
What was that movie?
Him and.
It's fuck's his name.
Oh, we're gonna get shit on so bad. We're gonna get
Franco.
Shot on.
I can't remember.
James Franco.
James Franco.
Yeah, what was the movie called? God damn!
If I Google anything, my fucking computer will explode.
And then there was the whole thing where they're like, they're gonna blow up theaters if they show it, and they didn't show it or some shit. I can't remember what the fuck it's called. The Interview. That's
I'll find out. Right. Yep.
The interview. Yeah. Okay.
The Interview. That's it. So yeah, this whole thing of like having dueling realities, but you know you're living in both, is the idea behind hypernormalization.
And you feel like you have no opportunity to change anything.
Right. You're completely, you don't know what to believe, so you just believe nothing, kind of.
Well, like how, especially in the Middle East, for example, like if you go back and you look at the beginnings of like the destabilization of the Middle East, and you can see fucking Kissinger's fingerprints all over it.
He was the, what was his title? What do they call it?
The fucking consigliere or some shit.
Consigliere.
geopolitical consultant.
No, that's not the title he had though. Like in, maybe like Canada, be like Minister of Foreign Affairs or something. But in the States,
you're talking about
like
Secretary of State.
Yes, it's the Secretary of
National
something.
Security Advisor.
Our National Security Advisor.
That what he was?
And he was Secretary of State.
He was Secretary of State.
But like, so he knew exactly. Like he knew Assad was going to be an issue. Like Assad's plan for uniting the Middle East would be a fucking massive issue for everybody, right?
Right.
So by going in there and being like, yeah, okay, how many meetings did he have with Assad to try to bring this plan to fruition? Told Assad everything he wanted to hear. I was like, yeah, we're on board, and went forth with all those plans, but just completely left Palestine out.
That seems to be the whole start of it, right?
You know what I mean? And then that's where, you know what I mean? You're isolating this group who's already lost their fucking homeland. You know what I mean? It's just a fucking recipe for disaster. And then when Assad fucking figures out what the fuck happened, they created the biggest monster in like Middle Eastern history.
Oh, yes.
Like, he was the creator of the fucking suicide bomber.
Well, no, not Assad, but the Iran was.
Well, but the situation is what created it, right? Like Iran came up with it, then Assad chose to use the suicide bombers. And that's really like, think about the lives that have been lost after that. Like that's the Middle East version of a fucking WMD right there.
Right, that was like their nuke. Because they didn't have nukes.
What was that group?
Well, and it really
Hezbollah.
Hezbollah was the group that originated in Lebanon.
Right, Hamas. I think it's Hamas.
Hamas was a group of, I believe, Palestinians that got isolated into a certain group that was exiled, and they sent him to the mountain somewhere, which was all right. Like,
They
isolated him to this mountain range area, which was like right next to a fucking Hezbollah stronghold. So they're like, hey guys, come over here. We got some stuff to show you. It's called it's called suicide bombing. It's great.
Well, because it originated, because I was watching that documentary, it originated that the original, like you would die for like by suicide as like a martyr, but it had nothing to do originally with taking other people with you. And then through this whole event, you committing suicide but taking others with you became,
well, it was justified because it initially it was justified because these plans were used against Israelis, and they were justifying it because anyone can be part of the fucking Israeli military, right?
Women, yeah, and children would eventually go be part of the military,
right?
So that's how they justified it. And then it just fucking went a little crazy after.
Well,
and
U.S. drew troops out of Lebanon because, like, it worked. Like,
how many Navy SEALs? Retreated. How many Navy SEALs died in Lebanon on that base due to the suicide bombers?
What was that first attack?
It was 200 and something.
Yeah,
yeah. It's
And then, so now, like, when that bombing happened, the 111, was it Beirut? It was in Beirut.
Yes, it was in Beirut.
So after this happens, it basically, it brings like the whole kind of Middle East thing home. You know, Ronald Reagan is in office, and Ronald Reagan, and I will say this for Ronald Reagan, that dude is charismatic as fuck.
Like, speaks he's well. An actor. He's a speaks movie well. Star.
I know, but God, like, you watch him talk and you're like, yeah, but you're like, oh, but no, but you watch that dude talk. But anyways, you know, his fucking, when Challenger exploded, like that fucking speech, like, but anyways, he basically, him and his administration shaped the U.S., the U.S.'s view that now it had become about good versus evil. Right. So now he's trying to take the U.S. and being like, to get them involved and be like, this is about the good guys versus the bad guys.
America, fuck
black and white. Right.
Yeah.
You know, white and black, whatever. But, you know, this is
we're good.
Something.
We have freedom. We have democracy.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. They're oppressing the people there. We need to save them because we are the defenders of freedom.
We have Hulk Hogan. They have the Iron Sheik.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, and even actually before this, so now we kind of have to talk about how in this documentary, they talk about how American counterculture is kind of developing or has been developing for the last since like 1970s and on. So you kind of had in the 1970s, when New York was kind of falling apart, you had this thing that I called like hyper individualization. You kind of had this feeling that people like started to draw inside. They started to take, you know, they started to take themselves out of the system, right? Because in the 1970s and stuff, you kind of get this stuff about people like, you know, you don't want to play the pot. You don't play the man's game, right?
Yeah.
You don't vote, right? You don't want to do all that stuff. That's just you taking part in the system and you're being part of their game, man.
You take this tab.
Yeah, man, don't worry about that. Just come take some LSD, man.
Yeah, you take the tab, you put it on your tongue, then you put another one, and then one more. And then the system doesn't even mean anything to you anymore.
Yeah.
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, baby.
So this kind of, you know, where it should have been, you know, where you think like it should have been this kind of like uprising, there wasn't.
Well, there was stuff about like, you know, there was anti-war protests and stuff, but they weren't actually protesting. That's the stuff they showed in the media. No one really knew about all this other stuff going on behind the scenes. And when they did know, some people knew about it, that's exactly what they do. Just like, well, there's nothing we can do. So fuck the man, fuck the system, rock and roll, and some hallucinogens. That'll remove ourselves from the problem.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
Yeah. So, or they start to embrace the kind of things because they had an interview with Patti Bell, and she's talking about, she's taking like a tour of like kind of downtown New York, like Bronx area. And she's talking about, oh man, like you see how those guys, they write on they do all the graffiti on the wall. That's like art. You know, I wish other cities had this stuff, you know, da, 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 da. I'm like, that is a sign of like bad infrastructure. you know, but you kind of have this, all of this, the stuff where people are, people start to draw in to themselves, right? They become in like, the thing becomes to rebel against the system is to take yourself out of the system, right? Or not participate in society.
It's probably the easiest thing to do.
Right. So they almost become complacent in this thing. So now there is this population of people who are living in the abandoned buildings of New York City, but they don't want to change it. Or they feel like they can't change it.
Feel like that's the thing. They feel like they can't, therefore nothing changes.
So then after this, all this stuff happens, you kind of have, so you have the suicide bombings going on now. You have the bombing in Beirut. And then you have the United States 4 months later, after they make this big speech about how they're going to take care, you know, they're going to go in and we're going to find the people who did this. They pull out. Like, we're gone. We're done.
Assad wins.
All right. So Assad goes on to take control.
Biggest victory in Middle Eastern history.
And which just strengthens his regime at the point and pretty much his
things. Well, and his ideologies. Mm-hmm. Is that how you say that? Because like now, like the suicide bombing stuff, it worked. It backed the U.S. up, right? So why? It's not like, all right, pack it up. That was crazy. Let's, can't believe we were doing that. It's like, no, let's kick that into overdrive. That was working for us.
Well, totally. And then, you know what I mean? It's going to be easier and easier to sell that fucking product to people now being like, no, like the suicide bombing worked. Obviously it worked because Allah gave us the gift of victory. Yeah. So you
God,
have to do
God
it.
God wants it to work, right? He gave us the victory, right?
Allah.
So now I can't remember where we go after this. So you have after Beirut and all these things happen.
Go to Gaddafi, don't you?
Right. So we get to Muammar Gaddafi, colonel, or you know, eventually leader of Libya at some point, previous now. and he, the United States was kind of like looking at this point, they were looking for a fall man, right? So they were kind of looking for something that was, you know, they didn't want to go up against Syria, right? Because Syria was too.
And in 1985, you had the Roman Vienna airport attacks. The Berlin, I think, was a year after the discotheque bombing. And you had like security agencies around the world being like, Syria did it. 100% Syria. Like Syria's doing this. And Syria was risky. Like no one, the states wanted to attack them.
You didn't want Syria because if you took on Syria, it took on Iran. And when you took on Iran, you took on the fucking Soviet Union too.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
weren't they allies with China at the time too?
China was still, they were still like, they were considered communist at the time.
Right. Like, so you have all this press about these bombings and you have the states in this frenzy of like good versus evil. Well, now you need evil to vanquish.
And this evil's too big.
You couldn't take on Syria. They didn't want to do it. Even though UK intelligence agencies, Italian intelligence agencies were all saying that, no, those bombings were done by Syrian terrorists. Or they were pointed in the direction by Syrian intelligence.
Orchestrated by Syria, yeah.
Right. And, you know, in the U.S., you know, he has at least one interview with the U.S., with the U.S., one of, like, national security advisors. And he says, oh, no, we have evidence that it was Libya. It was Gaddafi. And it's like, I love how they ask him, and it's like, well, the other ones say they have 100%. They have confessions from surviving terrorist bombers that it's with. And the guy's just like, I don't believe that.
Don't believe it.
I don't want to believe it.
It's like, we have a lot of evidence, circumstantial evidence, but you can put it all together. And it says it was Libya. And he's like, wait, the interviewer is like, wait, you say circumstantial, but the president says that it is undeniable. So what is it? Undeniable or circumstantial?
Circumstantial is enough to prosecute in the United States. So
yeah,
that's his answer. I was like, oh, unbelievable.
Well,
like,
in our court system, circumstantial is enough to go on. So,
but like at this point in time, Gaddafi was kind of the perfect target because he had kind of like isolated himself and Libya from the rest of the Middle East, right?
Right. Gaddafi had started to kind of push his own type of idea, his own type of political ideology, which he called like the third way. and it was
Universe or some shit like that.
Third
some weird
Universal something.
Yeah.
Can't remember. But he started to push this idea that you would run a, it was almost like communism, but it was communism with like a side of God. Like that's what it was. It was like religious communism. Well, it was like religious communism. I don't know how else to like explain it. Like, cause he was like, yeah, there would be no private ownership of the means of production. And, but also we also pray to God and we follow the precepts of, you know, of Islam. Right. Whereas like the Soviet Union is like, no God, no, not at all. Right. So, that was kind of the simplified version.
The states are kind of pinning these bombings on Gaddafi. And the best part about this is, what does Gaddafi do?
He says, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So what if I did it? The fuck are you going to do about it?
Right. Gaddafi plays into it. And it wasn't even like anybody prompted. He played into it. Like
he loved it.
He's fucking, and this is when you start like you see interviews of him beforehand, before this stuff happened, and he seems like a pretty normal guy. But once this stuff hits, like I don't know if you saw videos of Gaddafi like before he was overthrown.
He loves wearing sunglasses.
Oh
yeah,
dude, he fucking loved the limelight, man.
Yeah, he was a rock star. That's his persona, rock star persona.
Yeah, he claims he's just like, yep, so what? I did it, whatever. Didn't suck do it. And the U.S. makes him public enemy number one, leapfrogging this guy from, you know, outsider, maybe dictator to like the world's number one bad guy, right? Where every other bad guy wants to now be this bad guy's friend because he's so bad. And they bombed the shit out of Libya 10 days after the disco bombing.
Man, they blew the shit out of his house.
Oh, everything. Yeah. They dropped that thing on his fucking head.
His stepdaughter got blown to pieces.
Yeah. And there's this documentary, if you're squeamish, some of the fucking shit is like, it's radical.
Oh, it's show. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, heads up. There's dead babies.
No.
Heads
yeah. Up, no room for sensitive watchers.
No, it's a good watch, but this is your warning now if you haven't already.
It's
I feel bad for the people that maybe stopped half before this part and they're like, I want to watch before I finish listening.
Good journalism and what it is. They give you the full picture. No cuts.
Nah. So now you've got, yeah. So they bomb the shit out of Libya and it's like, yeah.
Now he's famous. Now he's famous.
Yeah. Now he's famous. But it's like, yeah. Mission accomplished.
Well, he was really smart though, because like his house was hit in that bombing, or you know what, maybe it wasn't his house and he just claimed it was, and he had footage of him standing over there being like, this was my home, this was my stepdaughter's room that got destroyed, these are my son's rooms that are now critically injured. And you know what I mean, the world got an opportunity to see what America did, you know what I mean, and a lot of people questioned their actions, right?
Yeah,
of people that didn't support the states that are now like, this is giving them even further reason to like dislike the West and, you know, rally behind Libya.
Yeah,
totally.
And this guy's ideals.
Well, the cool, like it's kind of a genius idea on his part too, though, because while all this is going out, he fucking started reaching out to like the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States and like just African-American population, telling them to fight for freedom, and he'll supply them with guns.
Yeah.
He'll support them to rise up.
It was a, you know, if you could
fucking
say
it's wild,
like a, wild,
you know, wild on his, spray. On his part. Yeah. It's like a masterstroke. It's just like, yeah, just go ahead and do that. It's like, I can't, you know, supporting dissonance in your own population, dissidents. It's just like, okay. You know, like you have archival footage of him, you know, of like the United States, like Muslim Brotherhood welcoming him, you know, onto their stage. He wasn't in the country, but you know, by satellite or whatever, having him on there. And it's just like, they're just like, I'd like to welcome our brother Muammar Gaddafi. And it's wow. Like this is something you just would never see.
Like wow. Crazy. Well, it's perfect though. Like he knew these people were being persecuted in their own country. You know what I mean? And they'd be easily manipulated.
So now from this kind of whole thing, there's, you have Muammar Gaddafi, who has now been defined, you know, he has defined himself as like the bad guy. Meanwhile, in the United States, you have the thing that's kind of the rise of now, like the information age. So now you have things like, is it TMR? Or TMR, which is okay, is it TMR or TIR? They were the company, that technology company that built computers that basically run the Cold War for the United States. And now they have shifted over into the next stage, which is basically they built the computers that keep track of everybody's credit.
Oh,
so now TRW.
TRW. Which is now you reach like the digital age. And now there is this idea that's starting to be taken up that there's like these, this is where the rise of the technocrat comes in. And you have these people who are like, what you call them, like digital utopians. And the people who are like, cyberspace, this will be the haven. This will be the utopia where it is not controlled by, you know, by outside forces, by companies, by, it's not affected by politics. It's where everybody's going to have a voice. It will be the refuge for the next generation.
Right.
Controlled by no one.
Controlled by, yeah.
Controlled by, yeah.
Good idea at the start.
Yes. Right. When you watch this documentary and you see where, what they had, the ideas they had for it, and then you look at how it's used now, you're just like, it's exactly what they didn't want.
So you have eventually the rise of, you know, this kind of goes, I mean, we're kind of skipping ahead probably a little bit, but you have like this whole thing where it's like the idea of, you know, social media becomes a thing where it's, you know, you eventually see the evolution of how, you know, primitive kind of AIs, artificial intelligence and things like that, where they have this, there's kind of like the two different kinds. You kind of have the ones, I know we talked about it. I know we talked about it in our artificial intelligence case file, where we talked about the types of artificial intelligence that govern like some stockbroking, like trades,
yep,
companies. Right. So they talk about a specific one called Aladdin, and where it's like, you know, you have this artificial intelligence where the only thing that it does is make money or maintain a certain amount of money that it has. And it does that by doing so many transactions so fast, like not big trades or little trades, but like just a bunch, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of microtransactions just to keep, you know, to maintain, right? Or to make more money. That's its only goal. And then you have that kind of technology along with the technology of, you know, the one that interacts with humans, right? So you kind of have this, you watch the development in this documentary of how we came to the idea of having, what did they call them? Like intelligence agents is the first one. It's like the precursor to today's social media filters, where right, you are fed certain, you're fed certain information, certain, you know, websites, advertisements that are targeted, you know, at you because of what your browsing history is, what information that you have, you know, websites you've gone to, videos that you've watched, things that you've ordered off the internet. And then that all goes into these algorithms and then it feeds you more stuff.
More right? Of what you like and what you believe. So it's like, you know, if, we've all been down those YouTube rabbit holes of like, it's like, you like this? Well, you like, and then later on, you're like, an hour later, you're like, how the hell did I get onto this?
Yeah.
And it's because each of those videos is just slightly, you know, people that like this, and people that like this, and they just feed it to you. They just keep pushing a steady stream of what they think you'll like based on what you've clicked before.
Yeah. You lose
at your face.
You lose the, like, the power of choice. In some, like, some cases, right? Like, you've made this one choice one time, and now you sign on to those cookies, and now those cookies think that is you, so then it's going to keep pushing information to you, like of that similar nature to you, even though maybe that's not what you exactly wanted to spend, you know, a whole weekend reading or going down that avenue, because you did one, then you did two, and then it's like, oh, this guy did two. So this is his circle or his or her circle. And it like lumps you into that tiny little group. So even though you think you have access to information of the entire internet, you're only being fed what the algorithms show you, really.
So now it becomes this idea that, you know, cyberspace, which was supposed to be the last refuge, is no longer about that. It's not about pushing ideas forward. It's no longer about giving everybody the same, you know, everybody's opinion or everybody's voice the same weight. It's more about just managing, right? So you have things where, like, after the bombing of, you know, Beirut and those things, and now it's about, there has come around like an age of chaos, which kind of technically Henry Kissinger was kind of being able to trying to avoid, that now it's about managing, right? It's not about moving forward. It's not about, because the good versus bad narrative doesn't really work anymore. You can't really push that. It becomes about managing the status quo, right? Trying to predict what's going to come next, but you can't predict what's going to come next, so you just try to manage.
It's just, you can take it back. Like in that documentary, they also show like a 5-minute montage of movies released not that far before the attacks of 9/11.
Right. Before, like all before 2001, you know, if you guys remember, it's like, you know, Independence Day, Deep Impact,
Armageddon,
yeah. Right? All of these absolute catastrophe, you know, this is disaster movies, Twister, all those things, you know, it's like all these movies where it's like, the worst of the worst could happen.
And to stop the worst of the worst from happening, we need to do something. So like this goes to that whole term of normal, like hyper normalization. Like, and if you go like as a conspiracy minded person, you would say like, all right, so no connections, obviously, just hypothetically. So you, they show you like a string of videos in this thing. They're like, this is, they all show like, oh, you know, the White House gets blown up and the Empire State Building and everyone's running and screaming and people are falling out of buildings. And then people become like, oh yeah, this is it. And then it happens in real life. And then immediately there's a narrative and everyone's like, oh, good, evil, those guys bad, this happened here. And like the questions, like the, there was no like time, like in the events of 9/11, there's no like discourse of what actually happens. Is like, oh, within the day they're saying, oh, Osama bin Laden, like, oh, Al-Qaeda, and like they and everyone just becomes like transfixed on that, even though a lot of people on that day probably are like, whoa, how do we know, does that like for sure we know this just happened, right? And so in that documentary, it gets you thinking like, if, after watching it, I just go, do I know anything about the reality I'm shown anymore? Is like where do you fucking draw the line
thing, man?
Well, like a perfect example of that is in that fucking documentary where right after September 11, they're like, we need to fucking bring somebody in here that's going to, you know, side with us and maybe prove that there's WMDs in the Middle East. And, you know, who could we fucking do that with? I don't know. Why don't we call up our good old friend fucking Gaddafi?
And no, all I think of a sudden, that was like after the invasion of Iraq where we were questioning whether they actually had WMDs.
Totally. And then so they call up Gaddafi and then Gaddafi comes forward and says, yeah, we have them. We're going to fucking disband them. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to produce them anymore. We're going to aid with the fucking, we're going to aid with the US and we're going to completely condemn anything that fucking, you know what I mean, bin Laden did. And we're going to condemn Saddam Hussein. And like, fuck, man, it's crazy.
Yeah. And what was it? They had the intelligence report about the WMDs that they had reported they had found in Iraq.
This was MI6, and, right? Oh, like the British secret, or like the British, what's MI6 compared to? Like the CIA?
It's fucking 007,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Or is it MI6, 007, MI5 is what it's actually called?
No, MI6 is...
MI6 is...
007.
Oh, okay.
I think there is it might be an MI5, I can't remember. I don't know. But that's like...
This is an intelligence report, again. Just from
this
before
is
you
an intelligence
this.
Report.
This was briefed the highest levels of intelligence and then brought to the public to be like authorized bombings of a country and its people. What was in that report, Dan?
And in that report was saying that they had these chemical weapons, which were going to...
I believe they were called VX gas-armed M55 rockets.
That were had the chemicals in glass containers, right, to be able to easily deploy. So now if you think back and you're like, huh, VX gas rockets. Gas rockets, glass containers, huh. Where do I remember that from?
Well, there's a fucking great Michael Bay movie called The Rock, where this intelligence briefing just steals the plot of the movie and sells it as intelligence. You do not use, like, basically all the scientists and professionals, like, it's from the movie. It's the plot of the movie. You don't have biological weapons in glass canisters. Like, that's not how it works. Like, that's not how these bombs work. I would have loved to been on that phone call of the head of intelligence to, you know, the president at the time, being like, you know, the army general, like, Jim, you there?
We got God damn it, Jim. Yes, I'm here.
I got bad news.
Go ahead, Jim. Give it to me.
You know the leader of Iraq?
God damn it, Jim. Yes, I do. Saddam Hussein.
Well, Hussein and his troops, they've took hold of a stockpile of dangerous VX gas-armed M55 rockets, Jim.
God damn it, Jim. That sounds a lot like Brigadier General Frank Hummel from The Rock.
Forget about that. I've got this on A-level sources, Jim. God damn it. Listen to me.
God damn it, Jim. Who did you talk to, Nicolas Cage?
No, I talked to Dr. Stanley Goodspeed and his partner, John Patrick Mason, God damn it. We've got to act. There's no time for thoughts.
God damn it, Jim. I've heard they've taken over Alcatraz.
That's where they found the bombs. They're threatening San Francisco. Jim, there's no time. God damn it. Attack. And then they're just like, yeah, fuck it. Let's bomb Iraq.
Yeah, let's just dump like billions of dollars worth of bombs on Iraq. Hell yeah.
Based off the plot of fucking the it's like when I saw that, I was like, is this a joke? Is this a joke?
It could have easily been like, God damn it, Jim. Jailbird, a prison transport flight en route to Alabama was hijacked.
Oh, Jim, you don't say, Jim. Who's on the flight?
God damn it, Jim. The world's worst criminals, Jim. Cyrus the Virus.
God damn it, Jim. What the hell are we going to do?
God damn it, Jim. We got a man on the inside.
Oh, thank God, Jim. Who is it?
Cameron Poe, Jim.
God damn it, Jim. That guy's a murderer.
God damn it, Jim. He's an ex-Army Ranger.
God damn it, Jim. He's a loose... He killed a man with his bare hands.
God damn it, Jim. He looks good in a tank top.
God damn it, Jim. Bomb Iraq.
That makes as much sense.
Yeah.
It's honestly, when I first read that, I was like, that is fucking crazy. That was passed off. And so it's like, my conspiracy mind goes right away where it's like, they didn't really think it through. And they're just like, we can just give this to the people. It sounds good. And people will just fucking eat it with a slice of cake, won't even care. And in the moment, no one did. And maybe people did, but the media, we didn't know. Like, it was just like, yep, do it.
Well, because they knew. They're like, come on, guys, that movie got great reviews. They're going to fucking love it. Everybody loves that movie. Had fucking Sean Connery. Great. Use it.
It could have been just like, this is just like the movies. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. I've seen this. That's why people got on board. They're like, oh, I know what to do. Bomb them.
So we did in The Rock. You fucking sit there with your flares right up in the air and fucking light it up. Like,
glass them.
Well, I mean, you could just be like, hey, listen, guys, you know what I mean? I know it sounds fishy, but maybe they got the idea from the movie. All right. These terrorists get DVDs too.
It's just the actual movie props. They got the movie props.
General Hussein, we've got the bombs you wanted from that documentary, The Rock.
They hire Ed Harris to come down.
play a rogue army general. Like,
but
you have this whole thing where it's like for the last 30 odd years or something like that, Muammar Gaddafi is the boogeyman, you know? Yep. And then they flip him.
He's a good guy now. He's changed man.
Right. They actually hired like a publicist agency, right? They hired like a publicist agency to help him, to turn him.
They turned him into a rock star.
Yeah. They invited him on to all this crazy stuff. Where it was like, they would invite him with, like contemporaries of his time of people like academics and things like that. And they'd put him on these shows and they'd have him talk about whatever, you know, but they tried to present him and change everybody's view of like what he was supposed to be. It's like, no, wait, he was the bad guy. Now he's the good guy. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, it seems legit.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
it's all about how you spin it. Maybe. How you put it in the news.
You know, and that's what they do. And then, so then we have that. And then after that stuff's done, we just toss them away. Right, and then like not following a few months later.
What was the Clinton quote? We came, we saw, he died. Okay, got him.
And so and then we drone striked him, and then drone striked a convoy, and he's dead. And then he was like, oh, and then everything's good. And it's like, wait, what? He was just our friend. Like
he was our friend and ally. And then the second his people started to rise up, we were like, yeah, he's a monster. We were never friends with him.
America.
We hate him. Because that was the story. That was the story. He was a bad guy again. And then they fucking killed him.
Buddy, listen. Libya needed some freedom. America gave it to him.
How's, simple as that. How's Libya doing right now?
Not good.
Not good.
Not great.
Not great. You mean like you know what, they have done a lot of good in the Middle East over the last what, fucking 20 years, right? Things are very stable there and good, and the economy's booming, right?
Yeah.
What? What timeline are you living in?
Maybe in like parts of United Arab Emirates, maybe.
That's it. I don't know. Lebanon's nice to go on vacation. I see a lot of pictures from family members, but I wouldn't fucking stay there longer than a week.
The country looks super nice. Super nice.
It used to be the Paris of the Middle East.
Oh, really?
So
yeah, it was beautiful back in the day, and then the fucking Civil War destroyed it.
All the rest of the bullshit since then.
Yeah.
So now the thing is like, if you think about this, you're like, how, if this is what they could do with a person who is, you know, pretty much globally reviled, and then they just flip him with the use of the media, you know, they could do that with anything.
Yeah. Like, well, here's my question, Dan. Could they do it with Mr. Conspiracy? I doubt it.
I don't know. That'd be a challenge. Yeah. You'd probably need two publicist firms for him.
Yeah.
full international team. No, but it does make you wonder though that, like, not only did it do it with Gaddafi, they do it with, like, pretty much every American invasion in our lifetime, like since 2001, like when I was like 13. And they went into Afghanistan, and then they've been into how many other countries in that region since? There's always like the enemy changes, and it changes quick, right? Like the enemy, it was Afghanistan, then it was Iraq real quick, and then it's Libya, and then they're back in Iraq, but they're still in Afghanistan, but then they're into Syria. So it's kind of like that, like the book 1984, where no one even knows who the enemy is, and it switches so quickly that everyone's like, "Oh yeah, I guess that's them now. I guess bad guys."
So now you think like, oh well, somebody's going to stop this, right? The public's going to rise up. There's going to be a revolution. You want a revolution, right? Because if you're a conspiracy theorist, right, you want this stuff to end because you know about it, right?
Sucks. Stop it.
Stop. Yeah, we want the revolution, right? But what are you going to do?
Wrong.
Do you really want the revolution?
No, I want to take LSD and pretend like nothing's happening.
Or you want to go occupy Wall Street, right? And then solve how it happened there, right? So when you look at this, and now you look at this thing where it's like you had the whole counterculture, individualization, things like that. And now you have this Occupy Wall Street movement. This kind of plays into the whole thing as well, where it's like the people have... the idea, right? They have the social, they have the management. They're like, this is how we're going to come together. This is how we're going to make a difference,
yep.
right? We're going to go sit on Wall Street. We're going to do our protests. And this is how we're going to change. We're going to make our voices heard. What happened?
They don't put, if they don't put in it in the media, because Occupy Wall Street was like a pretty big thing there, but it was not.
Oh, it wasn't. It was in the media, though. It was in the media. It was all over the thing. And then.
Till the next story.
It wasn't.
Until the next story.
But why is that?
Yeah, why is that? That's the question. Like, because whoever's controlling the narrative, they don't push it.
Or is it that? Or is it something else?
What's a something else? We don't want to
have normalization.
We're so hyper normalized that we just accept the status quo, no matter even if we think we want to protest.
Right. So there's like there's this idea where now it's like, okay, we did all this stuff, but where were you going to go from there? That's the thing. You want to tear, like, they want to tear down this system and they want to do all this thing, but what are you going to do to replace it?
Well, you can't replace a system without getting people who are running that system on board to replace it. Really?
Okay. Well, the weird one for me is like thinking about like to even go, no, like we've had the last month, like crippling protests of First Nations communities not wanting a pipeline going through and hereditary chiefs just blocking, like protest groups blocking rail yards and stuff all over the place. No to this pipeline. They don't want it going through. And now like the story now is, yeah, that's all good. And the pipeline's still going ahead. And I'm like, then what was this all about?
Yeah. Do we really not want the pipeline?
I was like, did we not want the pipeline? Do we want the pipeline? I don't know, but the pipeline's happening and the protests have stopped. So I was like,
it totally reminds me of the fucking Purge World episode where Rick and Morty go to the fucking Purge World, take out all the guys that are behind the Purge World. And at the end of it, they're like, yeah, all right, guys, good luck. Figure it out. And then they decide to fucking have a purge day.
You know what we need? Yeah. We need a day where we can all be very violent and kill each other.
Yeah. But we just saved you from that exact scenario. What's happening?
But
dude, you revert right back
and now
to it.
We look at the internet now, and it's not a free place. You are looking at the internet through what corporations want you to look at through. Like, you're typing in Google, they're watching everything you do. You're surfing the internet through censored means, like through Facebook. You're getting your information from Facebook that just pumps you. Like, if you are, I'm just going to say, if you don't like Trump and you're clicking on Trump memes and this, Facebook and Google go, oh, that's what he likes. That's what I'm going to give. So you no longer get
both sides
arguments from the other side or stuff refuting or stuff in the center. You just get more of what you are clicking on, and more and more and more just gets shoved to the front of your feet. Right. And it's crazy because you can see the divide happening.
It's
right. It's crazy. And it's like this is what happens, and we see it. The studies have done it, where it's like people start putting themselves into bubbles,
mm-hmm.
right? You start putting yourself into these bubbles of the information that is fed to you is personalized, it's targeted, and it's, you know, it's focus group tested, whatever you want to call it. And it's like, it starts putting people into these, isolation.
It's the ultimate ultimate form of divide and conquer without even knowing it's happening.
Right. People want to say that it's like, oh, they have a specific agenda, but it's like algorithms don't have an agenda. It's like they are just pushing you into these bubbles, and it's just like you're doing it to yourself. Like that, it's not a specific agenda. It's like that's what they want, but that's just their idea. It just happens
someone had to write the algorithm.
Right. But it's like, but they were putting the algorithm because like, oh, you know, that's what we need. We're like, okay, well, you know, people just click on more stuff because
it generates more ad revenue because they click on the same stuff they're interested in. So why not keep feeding the stuff they're interested in?
Right. It's just about making money. It's not necessarily something that's like, okay, it's like a sinister agenda. It's like, no,
but it could be.
This is just what makes money.
But it could be.
Could be?
It could be. And like,
but it's like, but it's in the best interest, like the politics that we play now, which are only concerned about, you know, managing, not about social movement. Mm-hmm. But it's like you just keep pushing them into their circles, pushing people into their bubbles. And then that's fine.
It's fine. Yeah. You start, like, people start, you know, it's identity politics in a way, right? You give yourself, unknowingly or knowingly, you're giving yourself an identity online that's putting you with a specific group of people, where now when you do interact with a group of people who don't see eye to eye to you or don't agree with you, instead of being like, oh, I see your point, however, I don't like this part, and like having civil discourse, it's like straight to outrage instantly. Just like, well, you don't believe that, but I believe that, so I must hate you because you hate me because we don't believe the same thing. About, you can name pretty much anything out there right now, and no one, there's going to be groups of everyone that are just hating on everybody over the internet, and they don't know them. Like, just every once in a while, I'll just poke into one of these, like the anti-vaxxers or pro-vaxxer groups, and just give a comment, just like somewhere in the middle, like, hey, I'm for vaccines, however, some people are affected negatively through allergic reactions, blah, 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 and here's these trials. They're like, well, those people are making up those trials because they were fed. And you're like, well, I'm not saying either way. I'm just, you know, I'm just putting a point in the middle, and no one can be like, oh, I see it, but they
can't.
That's
a good point. There is no gray area anymore. It's if you are left, you are left. Even extreme left, you're that. You're all of it. You can't be some of it. It's all or none. And same with the right. It's either you're extreme right, you're right, and you're all of that. You have to own it all because those are the two camps, and that's it. You're separated. There's no in between. It's like, well, that's not how I feel. Like, I have a whole bunch of things. Some of my views line up with the right. Some of my views line up with the left, right? And it's every one person's intricate, you know what I mean, in their belief system. But this makes you believe that, like, no, you don't have a choice. You either are these two camps, and that's it. There is no other choices.
Yeah.
So now you get into this idea where it's like, because I know we've talked about it a couple times, like, you have things like the Russian disinformation campaign, where Russia has learned how to take advantage of this. They've learned how to, basically, you don't want control. You basically want everybody else to be thrown into chaos, and you're the one causing the chaos, so you are in control. Right. Their whole idea now is they're kind of pushing this idea of, like, nonlinear warfare. When they came into, like, the Syrian war and things like that, nobody really knew what their agenda was. Nobody knew what Russia's agenda was. And we still don't. Nobody really knows what Russia wants at this point, except maybe, like, world domination. They want to take back Ukraine and the form it. So they want to reform the Soviet Union, perhaps. But they just throw stuff out there because, like, during Vladimir Putin's rise to power, once he came into power, the idea was pushed by one of his advisors called Vladislav Surkov, who pushed the idea that what they would do is they would support different political action groups, both even ones that were, like, radical. And we saw this in Project Gladio. Like, we saw this kind of idea where it's like, you support groups with differing political opinions. Right. You support the ones who are even the ones who are opposing you. Like, you would push you would put support behind them, and then you put support behind the one that opposed them, because then nobody would know. Nobody knows right. Who's supporting who. Right.
It's bananas.
It's getting even worse now, because, like, we've seen, like, this war on information. Where it's like, you can't even trust where you get information now.
So you can't trust any source.
Even me, like, I find myself, like, a very, you know, I take everything with a grain of salt. I don't really believe everything, but I'm like, I don't know even where to get information from anymore. Cause I'm like, can this source be trusted? I don't know anymore. This is the world we live in, where it's like, everyone's fucking shit, and everything you read, someone else is saying, well, that's fucking make believe, and you don't believe it. And it's gotten to me. I'm like, you know, where do you get sources? Where do you get information that's trusted? It's hard.
It's, like, definitely part of the reason we haven't been doing a lot of conspiracy theories lately, I think, is just the same stuff, because someone says, like, well, Clinton did it. And you're like, oh, okay, well, let's look into it. And then, but if you don't find the right thing, then they're like, well, you didn't look in the right space. You're on their team. You're like, well, I know. I just want to get it. I want to fall down the rabbit hole. I want to have some fun. I want to talk about what the conspiracy is, but you can't, because there's factions of the conspiracy realm, like the conspiracy culture, especially around, like, anything political right now, where it's like, well, you see it one way, but someone doesn't see it that way. So, and they'll never come to, like, they'll never meet in the middle. You can't just like talk about it civilly. It's just like, well, I hate you now because you didn't agree with me. And you're like, well, that's, I don't know. Like,
yeah. And now pretty much at the end of the day, now it's, you have this kind of, it is very much like what they had in the former Soviet Union. We have hyper-normalization where it's like, you can look at it now, like now in real time, yep, where you have stuff like information coming from the current US administration or even any political thing, any political administration about coronavirus. You're like, first one, it's like, okay, it's this. It's like, you know, it's not that bad. We're just going to be like, okay, you know, we're going to quarantine some people. Like there's some cases out here. It's like, it's not anything to be really be worried about.
Wash your hands.
And then you have like another media source, and I'm not saying just CNN or Fox, but you have like other, everybody just wants to say CNN and Fox. Yeah. Those are the two end alls apparently, but I'm saying anywhere, any information, any whatever. And it's like, it's the fucking Armageddon. Like it's goddamn end
half
times,
the world's population know? Is going to be infected and 450 million people are going to die. You're like, well, that's where is, come on.
And
where
it,
you
and it
from?
Changes every day. You'll read like, you'll read from some websites where it's like, they'll flip flap. Like the one day they're like, oh, it's that, it's this. Oh, but they just did this. And then information is changing so fast and things are happening so fast. So you're like, you don't know what to believe anymore. And what it really wants, like, you know, if you're conspiracy minded or whatever, it's like this kind of, the documentary kind of posits this thing idea that where it's like, they want you to disconnect.
Yeah.
They want you overwhelmed.
Give up.
They want you to draw in, you know, they want you to become isolated.
My vote doesn't count.
What was the biggest news up before this fucking Corona shit came off, right? Like all we were hearing about was fucking the protests in Hong Kong. And now that Corona's come to fucking, you know what I mean? The head, you don't hear about Hong Kong at all anymore. Like, do we even know if there's protests still going on there?
There are still protests.
I'm sure there is.
Well, exactly. But you have no idea because it hasn't been in the fucking news for I don't know how long.
Right.
It's been completely overshadowed by a fucking virus that's got less of a kill count than the fucking common cold and the flu.
Right. And it's not, I'm like, I'm not, and we're not trying to make light of the people who have died from it.
No.
Just like, it's, no, but it's something where
from,
it's like,
people die from viruses infections every fucking day on a daily basis. There are far more fucking terrible fucking flus and viruses that you can get than this. And it's just, yeah, it's ridiculous how this is the latest fucking obsession.
People are buying out Costco. I was at Costco, true story. I was at Costco today and I walked through an aisle and there was just nothing on the shelves, like the whole half aisle of Costco, nothing on the shelves. I'm like, what the, I've been Costco a lot of times. There's never an empty whole row.
So here's my question, though. Is this because they're worried about having to isolate themselves in at home, so they need to have like a stockpile of toilet paper?
I think the story of what I think the main reason is someone published an article saying there is paper, like toilet paper production facilities in Wuhan, China, which aren't producing. So therefore, there's a global shortage and you're going to be no toilet paper at all. So everyone went out and bought all the toilet paper.
Big TP.
Big TP. Just need a bum gun.
Burn it all. You know whose life's not going to change? The guy who doesn't wipe his ass.
You don't even do a single, a single dab after the bum spray?
I could use a towel.
No. I guarantee you got some poop particles running down your leg.
It's always clean.
No.
Just because you don't see.
You get on a bidet, everyone.
Dude, just because you don't see.
What kind of disinfecting product do you have in your fucking toilet bowl that cleans your asshole other than just water?
What
you understand
kind
that
of
doesn't clean your fucking...
Okay. What I'm doing... Hey, do you want to get me started? What I'm doing is way better than just rubbing the shit into your ass until it's gone.
I understand that, though, but then you way just fucking better. Grab a hand towel and wipe your fucking chocolate starfish with and toss it back in a pile?
No.
That's what you just said. That's what you just said. You said, just grab a towel.
I'm saying in a world without toilet paper,
I'd love to see fucking Lady Braden fucking washing racing stripes out of your fucking hand towels. Fucking gross.
A little pink eye.
Yeah. Exactly.
Fucking gross.
Anyways, I'm just saying, like, if they can manipulate people's views of world events so easily, just like to the point where people just give up and like remove themselves from the system. I can't now when all these stories come out, I'm like, especially if you say that it's because it really is financial institutions governing the world because they supply the money for all the policies, like all the budgets is all coming from central banks, a conglomerate of central banks, you know, under the title of like the World Monetary Fund. So if like in New York, take it back to the beginning when now the banks control the discourse of decisions made through the city, we're just operating on a global level of that system. So if the money, if coronavirus, if they're like, it's an, it almost seems like an organized market collapse, but the market's collapsing. What happens? The media pushes it more, which allows more people to pull their money out of the market because they're like, oh, the coronavirus is coming. And then the whole fucking market drops within a week. And you're like, why? This was not unnecessary fear-mongering of,
here's
a thing. It's crazy.
Let's get into real conspiracy. If the banks are controlling all this stuff now, right? And we have some AI that are controlling hedge funds and shit that's just sole purpose is to make money. Is it not better to pump information to crash stocks to then buy
for sure
buy up stocks, right?
Well,
right,
I know
and now sit on it for a mass gain. So if you have all your little fingers and all your little AI tentacles and all these different stocks, you know, doing microtransactions and everything tanks and you're just putting money in everything, knowing that you can manipulate the markets to go back up because this is just a false, like a false alarm and everything's going to rebound, but you've scared it enough that you can get in low again. And then when it rises, just pull money out, right?
Guarantee. If you look, if you had the resources to look into what has been like, kind of like the 08 collapse of the housing bonds, if you had the resources to look into who like bet on the market to fail, I guarantee some people just made hundreds of billions of dollars in the last couple of weeks. Guaranteed.
And I know there's also this kind of theory that if you do have AIs, because I know it was a thing with Bitcoin. Like I remember reading an article about Bitcoin where they were saying that there are two large like AIs that kind of govern the whole cryptocurrency thing or a large part of it. And so what happens is like you have these AIs and they're triggered by certain events or certain numbers that pop up. So when one AI or maybe some people, like maybe not even AI, but people kind of start, you know, selling their stocks or things like that, then the AIs pick up in it and it's like a feedback loop. So one AI drops all its shit and then another AI is like, oh shit, I gotta drop my shit too. And then it's all of them just, and it's just like, it brings it all back down until it gets to a certain point and then it comes back up.
But it shows how fragile modern financial system is.
And right. Okay, and let's not forget, like all these big media corporations, like they're not owned by us. The public doesn't own them, right? Like they're,
well, a lot of them are publicly traded.
Publicly traded, yeah, but they're controlled by,
the decisions are controlled.
Billionaires.
Yeah.
Right? So if you have these kind of people and they're like, more Corona, right? That's what's getting the clicks. Who gives a shit? That's what's getting clicks now. That's what's getting ad revenue. Right. More Corona, pumping it, right? Like that's all they care about.
So kind of when you watch this documentary and Brain and all this, it's like, it's hyper depressing, or it feels really depressing. When I look at it, I've watched the documentary like three times, but I see there is some positives takeaways from this thing. And you know, we can wrap it up here or whatever. But I feel like that the counterculture,
positive.
There the counterculture that has come from this, it has been evolving. Like it hasn't. It's not done. Like it's not ended, right? We had the individualization, which was about the development of self. It was about like drawing into yourself and kind of developing the best self you can kind of be, or expanding your mind, or those kinds of things.
Getting fucked up.
But that wasn't it. You know, taking yourself out of the system isn't part of it. Then you kind of had things like the movements of Occupy Wall Street, which is like they had the right intentions, right? They want the revolution, but they didn't have the vision. They didn't understand that once you break the system, or you want the system to break, you need something to replace it, or else you'll get something like how you got the rise of ISIS, where you break Iraq and then something comes in who has a vision comes in and fills the vacuum. And it might not necessarily be the vision that you had in mind.
Right.
So if you want, and so now there is this kind of, at least in the United States, you have this kind of, or we've seen a little bit of it, there's a bit of it, just the shininess little bit of like the new youth kind of progressive wave into government, right? You've seen the people who are, you know, I would probably put them with the optimistic ones, the ones who are pushing for social change and things like that. There is something there. There's a spark there.
There's something,
right? The thing is, like, you can't remove yourself from the system. If you're going to say, like, I'm not going to vote, my vote doesn't matter, you know, the system is just going to leave me behind, or I am not part of the system, that's not going to change anything, because it hasn't been changing anything for the last 50 years.
Nope.
But there is, like, you pay attention to the small things. And again, the algorithms like to govern the stuff that you see. But if you move outside your bubble, like, if you reach across, you know, you push yourself to understand and reach out to other people and see things from other points of view, you will see that things have changes. You will see the connections. They don't want you to see that your actions, you know,
it's still there.
Effects.
Like, it's still like, even though the internet is controlled by it's not fully controlled by a few corporations. They just control the most what am I looking for here? The most popular platforms. But the internet has also brought avenues like podcasting with no filter. A lot of people hate Joe Rogan, but at the same time, Joe Rogan has that podcast and podcast similar to his have open avenues where very smart people who know the stuff we're talking about can express their point of view with an unbiased, commercial-free environment. And people are like, oh, I get it. Like, okay, that's what he's thinking about, and that's why he thinks that way. And so, like, in that way, the internet is part of like a new movement in a way where, as long as you don't get sucked in by everything you see on and get like those fucking Facebook and Twitter fights where you don't even know the person, you're not trying to have a conversation. You're just yelling. You're yelling at each other through your keys, and nothing ever happens. Sometimes you read a feed of like an argument on Facebook, like, nothing's happened. There's been 200 comments. We're at the bottom. And you still think that, and you think that. No one knows why you even thought that. It's crazy. But like, there is avenues where the social change can take place. And I think we're seeing like the beginnings in the last few years.
Yeah. And I think this is maybe we're going towards that idea that the original, you know, the originators of the internet and the, you know, cyberspace had in mind, where it's like, we're getting there. Like,
free podcasting and open source.
We're getting there. Like, we're making progress. You know, it might not be as fast as we want to be, but it's whatever. And I think, like, you know, being part of this community, I think we've got great fans who are all level-headed, and at least we're all moving in some direction, you know, for whatever.
Maybe not everyone agrees exactly, but everyone could see your point of view and be like, well, I see why you think that way. And like, at least open their mind up.
Yeah.
You can't just close off.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a thing. Like, it's weird the times we live in.
I think this was going to happen. This is my prediction. As this power structure in place right now, like the financial power structure starts to lose hold, you're going to see more aggressive tactics like the coronavirus thing to instill fear in the public, is what I think. I almost think this coronavirus thing is like the precursor to something even more extreme.
I was telling people at work today, I said, listen, we are in for it now, because we are going to see something like this every year now. There's going to be something in the news, right? There'll be a big event every year like this.
I almost think that this mass push.
It's a moneymaker, man.
I almost think that the mass push of the coronavirus thing is like a trial to see how much we can sway public opinion just by pushing it over and over and over. It's like that old quote. I'm not sure if it's from Hitler, but it's from like the Nazi party. Like, you tell a lie, you tell a lie enough times, eventually it becomes the truth. Because people are just like, they hear it and they're like, well, I've heard that from everyone, so I guess it must be true. And if news is only owned by, because it's only owned by like what, five companies, five sitting boards of directors who own like 300 media outlets over North America and the Western world. But it's only like five companies. So if those, even if two or three of those companies start running a story that maybe not is 100% true, all those, like, all the media channels from international right down to, like, your grassroots, like, local newspaper all start running the same story because they always get it from the guy above them, you can easily change public discourse really quickly, even if the story is not true.
Well, and like you were saying, like right before September 11th, we saw movies like Independence Day and Armageddon come out. And what movie, right before the fucking coronavirus scare came out, what movie was voted the greatest movie of 2020 and pretty much told everybody to watch it because it's the best thing that they've ever seen?
Was that Pandemic on Parasite. Netflix?
Parasite.
Oh, Parasite. Yes, Parasite.
You know what I mean? It's like it fucking fits in perfectly.
It makes you think, like, almost sometimes seems too perfect. We're like, okay, this is either a simulation or someone's controlling just like everything.
Art imitating life. It's yeah. weird. Life imitating art. It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. I agree. I don't know.
Just like I said, strange times we live in, but give that documentary a watch. It's a real eye opener. You get it's really well done.
So all just talk to each other. No, yeah. Don't have to yell. I don't got to yell.
All right. This one went really long, so let's not do everything we had planned at the end, but one thing we need to do is March needs a meat draw winner.
Oh, meat shit! Draw!
It's the good stuff. It's everybody's been waiting for.
Okay.
So oh, shit.
We got all the names. And if you're supporting at $10 or more.
Okay. Yes, you're in the meat draw.
You're in the meat draw.
I've got the meat draw raffle back working, so we have a visual. And if you're one of those people that go, well, I didn't see my name. There was 110 names, and the raffle only takes 14 seconds to pick a name. So it doesn't cycle through all 110.
Well, it does. No, it cycles through all. It doesn't show all the visuals to every name.
Yeah, it doesn't show all the visuals, but it cycles through. You have a chance. Don't worry. You're in there. I make sure painstakingly every month that everyone's in there.
The most work Braden puts into the podcast every month is
what you're about to see.
Is putting this video together. Okay, let's load the meat draw. Yeah. All right, here we go.
10, 9.
I haven't watched
8,
this yet.
7.
Here we go.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Curtis Burchard?
Burchard.
That was right. That's from Australia. February's meat draw winner.
Oh yeah, February's meat draw winner. And congratulations to him. You've got a sweet package coming your way. I had already reached out to him before the show and talked to him. Got his address. Good old Australian boy. Funny enough, he was telling me he volunteered at Big White a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I was like, he's like, it would have been easier if I won back then. I said, yeah, it would have.
It would have.
Saved us a little bit on shipping.
Less too.
Yeah, shipping would have been a lot less.
And we don't and we don't rig it. Some people are like, well, you pick who you want. I'm like, no, because I would pick someone who lives way closer to me every time.
they would always live in Canada.
We just hand deliver it to our friends.
They would always live in Canada and always in British Columbia because you don't know any of these people's names. I could just make them up. So just like Zelly makes up Yeetus Fetus.
Oh, give me a break.
Furdu.
I'm about to read some more.
Yeah, Furdu.
Come on, Freedu.
Okay,
give
so
us more.
We just did the meat draw. That's $10 a month if you're supporting. You get entered for the meat draw. Get some pretty much something exclusive every month, plus like a hoodie.
Shrickety and swag.
Sometimes a book. It all depends. All depends what's up that month. But let's see here. If you're supporting the show, you get your name read. That's the bonus. and access to like 75 hours of extra stuff, but
only 75,
no big deal, like just a whole nother podcast if you want it. It's up to you though, no pressure. Stevie Erickson, John, god damn it, it's not made up. Shasasina made that one up, I bet. Justin Belcher, Brandon, Michaela, Tyler Coker, Garrett Knees, Sierra Small, Josh How? H-O-U-G-H.
How?
How?
Hoof?
Hoof? How? Either way, thanks for supporting. Bo Young, Andrew Fisher, Carl Sawatsky, Hayden Turnbull, Destiny Balande, Rabea. When did we record last? What was the last date? March.
Huff. It's Huff, because I remember you saying it's Huff? Like rough.
It's Huff, like rough?
Yeah. He's in the Discord server. It's Huff. Yeah.
Josh Huff, like rough.
Yeah.
Okay, back down to where I was. When did we record last?
I forgot. March.
An hour ago. An hour before we did this show.
Matthew Roberto. Cody Reed. I think we're past this anyway. Christopher Boyalis, James, Kenneth Perry, Nolan Brumley. Yeah, we're past.
Yeah.
Wilfred Brimley.
Oh, diabetes.
Diabetes.
Yeah.
Also, if you want some merch, go to Alien Theorist Theorizing. .live, go to our merch. You can buy some t-shirts if you don't want to support the show on Patreon. That's fine. Buy yourself a shirt. Buy yourself a hat. We got some new stuff coming up. I'm going to mix up the store here for spring. I'll probably do that March 20th, the Equinox.
If you hate subscribing spring. To stuff and just want to give your boys a one-time thank you, you buy a shirt or anything, a few bucks, and you supported the show. Are we going to do Randomatron or are we out of time?
We're out of time. This one's super long.
Right, I got a band of the week. These guys are called Predisposed. They're from Northern California. It's like a punk, post-hardcore hybrid band. Pretty good shit. So you can check them out on Spotify. The song is called The Truth Nobody Knows. Kind of very fitting for today's case file. Play at the end. Anything else?
No.
That's what we say at the end of these things. Keep those eyes on the skies. Thanks, everyone.
Peace, everyone.
There's nothing left in me to show. That's why we choose to cry.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.